As you know, we're spending our summer talking about a world without walls. Mundo sin muros. Months ago, Pastor Maria submitted the title as a topic for a seminar we will lead this Friday at Wild Goose. It was timely when she submitted, of course. The whole platform of this administration, this nightmare, has always been persecuting and scapegoating immigrants and building border walls. All kinds of hate has been spewed along the way. I still see people walking around in bad hombre and nasty women t-shirts, even though that feels like so long ago. Or was it? It's gotten worse from there, calling real human people animals and more. Sometimes I feel like it's difficult to remember a time prior to the devastating, dehumanizing news around every corner. And as we've reminded ourselves many times before, people of color have known it was bad all along. It's past time for us to see, to awaken, to change, to imagine a new way forward. But hatred has also been emboldened. Hate crimes are up, and we never stop seeing the absurdity of a white neighbor calling the cops on his brown neighbor enjoying their neighborhood swimming pool on a hot day. This disease of racism, of white supremacy, is eating us alive. As a church, one of the questions we ask again and again is, what is our role in the resistance? I think it comes in many forms, in marching and being vocal with our elective leaders about the things we care about, in community organizing and supporting causes, doing the work on the ground, in doing the work on the ground when we are able. And another key role the church plays, perhaps the primary role it plays, is in shaping our moral imaginations. So much moral debate has been reduced to abortion and same-sex marriage, but this is not new. The moral majority of the 80s spent a lot of time and energy and money reducing morality to these two things. If you need evidence, just look at the arguments about the next Supreme Court justice and what decisions might be overturned. The church has taken on the role of oppressor over and over again, rather than liberating the oppressed. But how did we reduce our moral imaginations to this? Why do so many churches settle for these legalisms, oppressions, and culture wars rather than clinging to the expansive, life-giving moral imagination of the gospel? This summer, we turn to our sacred text, to the book of Acts, which is the second half of Luke's gospel. And we go with open hearts and minds to see how we might be shaped by the Spirit of God, moving in and among us to the ends of the earth. I should stop for a moment and tell you about one of the guides on our journey, Dr. Willie Jennings. Dr. Jennings is a New Testament and Black Church Studies scholar and professor. And before he took up his current post at Yale, he was on the faculty at Duke Divinity School. There, Pastor Maria studied with him and was profoundly transformed by her time in his classroom. He opened up the construction of race and racism and white supremacy, and thankfully I've been able to learn alongside her. The reason I bring him up this morning, however, is because he's written a brilliant commentary on the book of Acts that gives this series shape. You can hold it up. You've heard us use the phrase, the revolution of the intimate, a number of times now, but this is critical to understanding what Dr. Jennings is up to. Essentially, his thesis, his primary claim, is that Pentecost, the Acts of the Spirit, is about a revolution of the intimate. the joining together of people in divine love. God's Spirit comes in the wind and fire, and Jennings says, this is God touching, taking hold of tongue and voice, mind and heart and body. This is joining, unprecedented, unanticipated, unwanted, yet complete joining. Those gathered in prayer asked for power. They may have asked for the Spirit to come, but they did not ask for this. This is real grace, untamed grace. It is the grace that replaces our fantasies of power over people with God's fantasy for desire for people. The Spirit creates joining. This, my friends, is a new imagination. This real untamed grace replaces our fantasies of power over people with God's fantasy, God's imagination, God's desire for people. At the end of the chapter on the coming of Spirit, of the Spirit in Acts 2, we find today's story. And it must be an important one we're supposed to pay attention to because it's repeated again two chapters later. Sister Lorena read both accounts for us a few moments ago. The stories are about how the believers shared all things in common. The community is caught up in a whole new imagination. They are caught up in the desire of God for people. It says they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. All who believed were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all as any had need. Maybe we could just start there. Often we come to this text with our rational Western brains and declare that this was a utopian ideal that couldn't and didn't last economically. But if we stop there, we would miss the point. Jennings urges us not to focus so completely on the spectacular giving that we lose sight of the spectacular joining taking place. He writes, the Divine One wants people and draws us into that wanting. They give themselves to one another and the possessions follow. They are completely caught up in the love of God. The possessions are in service to this divine love, this divine imagination. And so if possessions are useful to draw people into this life and away from death and the end of the reign of poverty, hunger, and despair, then as Jennings says, so be it. You see, the common life together is the gift realized in the Spirit. The common is the gift, the fruit of the revolution of the intimate, a knowing and loving and participating in divine love that permeates, presses through, scales and tears down the walls and boundaries that separate us. But what about us today? In this time and place that we find ourselves, we're part of a society that has constructed a host of boundaries that keep us from sharing life, from letting our lives be permeated and transformed and caught up in divine love. Boundaries like poverty and economic inequality, like race, gender, and criminality, like nation states, personal property, and much, much more. We've even built boundaries around our hearts to make sure no one can get in and hurt us, or more likely hurt us again. How can we be caught up in a divine imagination when we've grown so accustomed to all of these walls, when we've grown so accustomed to private ownership, individual success, and separate lives? Journey with me for just a moment, to another place and another time in history. While we were in El Salvador, we had the chance to spend one morning visiting the Mayan ruins that are still being excavated. They call it the Pompeii of the New World. Around 600 AD, the whole village was completely covered by a volcanic eruption. To date, they haven't found any human remains, so it seems as though the people in the village had enough time to flee. But the volcanic ash preserved much of what was buried, giving us a remarkable glimpse of what life looked like at that point in time. As our guide showed us through the ruins, we learned that each household was made up of three small buildings. One was for sleeping and shelter. One was a kitchen. And one was a building that was shared with the community. For example, one household had a sauna, and that served as a place of healing for the whole community. Another household had a structure used for community festivals. Another had a building where the shaman could practice and care for the needs of the community. Another had a civic building where community leaders met to solve local problems. Are you picking up on the nature of their life together? Their households were in service to one another. Their homes were in service to the whole community. Their lives were bound to one another. They were held in common. We walked around the ruins together, looking each other in the eye, nodding at each other, and saying, "That'll preach." We were witnessing a different imagination altogether. So how do we take part in this divine imagination? How do we let ourselves be overcome with the divine love that permeates all walls, even into the ends of the earth? I found deep resonance with two places in today's text. The first is verse 42 of the reading. It says, "They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and fellowship, to the breaking of bread and prayers." And I felt myself responding with a deep yes. Yeah. Isn't it in these practices, the breaking of the bread and prayers, that we experience the revolution of the intimate? That our love for one another grows and transforms us, that our love takes over our imagination of what life together looks like. While we are battered with bad news and dehumanizing behaviors all around, we can find ourselves in a bit of whiplash, or so amped up on anger and indignation that we almost can't breathe. And rightfully so. Again, this is not new for so many among us who have been bearing the weight of this oppressive empire since its earliest days. It is high time that we share the load, that we tear down the walls that created the oppression in the first place. I bring it up again now to say that in the midst of all of this, it can be difficult to find joy, to find our centers, to be in touch with the depth and wisdom of our hearts and souls. But the place that I regularly find joy is the same place where these first converts did, in the teaching and fellowship, in the breaking of bread and prayers. When we gather, be it for worship or fellowship or for birthday parties or one-on-one conversation, for sharing the cares and concerns of our hearts, or marching from the White House to the Department of Justice, when we gather and practice our faith together, I am caught up in a new imagination with you. My hope is renewed in ways that I could not expect. I sense God in our midst, moving in and among us, inviting us to linger and nudging us on. The other place I found deep resonance comes from the repeat of this story in chapter 4. It says, the whole group of those who believed were of one heart and soul. This isn't some touchy-feely phrase about the emotions of the early church. The heart and soul represented their whole beings. Nothing was left out of this oneness. Of course they shared what they could. Divine love, the Spirit of the living God, means to permeate every heart and wall, even to the ends of the earth. Let us not give up. Let us commit ourselves to teaching and fellowship, to the breaking of bread and prayers. May we be caught up in this revolution of the intimate, in the gospel imagination, in divine love, in the joining of the Spirit.